This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Did he hit Austin? My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Way, you know.
They say the life we lead ain't good enough. Our load is heavy and our hands are rough. Possession is a funny thing indeed. You get what you want and never what you need. And that might be true enough for all the rest. But you and me, babe, you know we've had the best. I may not get to where these songs I do ever break through, but I will get to you.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, globally, statewide, nationwide, worldwide, the P2 Podcast being broadcast to all ears out there, yearning, thirsting, and starving for knowledge, for perspective in these complicated times, a musical perspective, that guiding light in the fog, we like to say here on the podcast. To all you enlightened souls out there, how you doing? Phil here, thrilled to be with you, delighted as always every week to join you here to talk to you on the podcast. What a show we have for you. God, I feel like we've just been lucky of late. Had some great shows, great guests, people dropping by. It's great, man. This is around our 100th episode now. 100, 100, folks. Couple of years of the podcast. And we have you to thank for. Thanks for all your emails, all your support out there. I get so many great emails from everybody out there. All over the country, especially you folks out of state, really want to reach out. Let us know you're listening. We appreciate it so much. What a week we've had. How about last week with Troy Johnson and Jordan Powell? Aren't those guys some characters, man? Out there at the Grammys hanging backstage with Dylan and Eminem. Well, they're going to be dropping by here also today in our second segment to follow up on what we were talking about last week. We're going to revisit some of our old stories, our silly stories we have on the road, fun times, and also talk about how Jordan Powell is visited by the three ghosts of Don Henley. I'll explain later. Listen to our middle segment. Oh, man, did you watch the Oscars? You know, I don't know if I'm just getting old or what. Of course, that's always part of it. That's always part of it. It's these changing times, you see. Man, I watch the Oscars every year. I look forward to it. I always watch. And man, the other night, it pains me to admit that, you know, about 9:30 after a couple hours, I just turned it off. I just said, man, I'm going to sleep. I hadn't seen one of the films they were talking about. I don't even know if I wanted to see any of them. And it just got me to thinking that, I wonder if Hollywood, has passed me by a bit. I don't know. I saw a fascinating story on the telly the other morning. They were talking about, you know, the old perception of movies and kind of what movies represented in culture. You know, movies drove the culture. We always talk about it. Does music still drive the culture? Do people listen to music to really know about, you know, which way the wind's blowing, politics, etc. But movies did, you know. I mean, there was always kind of cutting-edge stuff being nominated for Oscars, the indie stuff, the big blockbusters. And now it just seems like there's 10 films nominated for the Oscar that no one's really seen. And if everyone's seen it, you know, something like Avatar or something, it was just kind of this blockbuster, silly 3D deal. You wonder just what the importance of film is. But I saw an interesting perspective the other morning. They said really in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, Hollywood's idea of what film was, how to make money making movies, you see, these expensive movies, was you had to get women to go to the theater. They drove movie business. They drove the box office. The perception was they drag their girlfriends, or, you know, packs of them, their girlfriends all go to the movies. Or they drag their boyfriends, they drag their husbands to the movies. So, man, you had films like, Terms of Endearment, Steel Magnolias, kind of these weepy chick flick kind of deals, you know. And how that has just started to decrease. You really look around, like Jennifer Aniston, and I don't know who's Julia Roberts, whoever's still making movies right now. They don't really make chick flick fare, you know, like Beaches or something, you know. You don't see a lot of that. They're kind of in comedies and stuff. And the analysis out of Hollywood of the last, you know, really 10 years is that movies are no longer driven by women. It's driven by young men, young teenage boys. And so, man, all you get now is – so that's the golden goose. You say, man, we got to get them in here. So that's why you just have an endless, tireless parade of 3D action blockbuster, you know, just Superman 8, you know, Spider-Man The Beginning, films that they're just reinventing ways to make the same movie over and over, actions, explosions. And also those types of films with very little dialogue, very little script, just a lot of action, explosions, that plays well in the ever-growing foreign market. You know, really, Hollywood, I think they said that they make more money out of the country than in the United States. So the big markets are Europe, Asia, you know, so it's hard to translate The Godfather to, Chinese. There's a lot of, it's a historical piece. There's accents, there's languages, there's a lot of dialogue. It doesn't work as well. Where you just throw Avatar or something. It's just sort of a loose story about, you know, people flying around shooting each other in some foreign world. That plays a lot better in the foreign markets. And so that's really what you have. And so now these films like The King's Speech and The Black Swan and these arty kind of films, they still get made. They still get nominated for Oscars. But man, few people have seen them. They don't get the wide releases maybe they once did. And you know, I looked at the Best Picture list, went online the other day, and just I can't remember exactly what it was, but just if you really look at the best pictures over the last, I don't know, 40 years, I mean, through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, they were films, just the monsters, the gigantic films of our time. I mean, just Godfather, Rocky, Schindler's List, Forrest Gump, stuff like that. That just everybody saw, that was, it was just the best film of the year, and it won all the Oscars. And man, from 2000 to today, man, the best picture award has gone really to like just kind of remote, and I think even right now, largely forgotten films that really aren't going to stand the test of time too much. What does that say, folks? I want some emails on this. Doggone it. What role does going to movies play in your life as opposed to maybe, in years before? I'm talking like, I think in 2000, man, was Gladiator. I mean, just an epic blockbuster summer, huge scope. I mean, a great, you know, and in the 90s, you had Braveheart and Gump and Schindler's List. Then you kind of have Gladiator, 2000, I think it was. I'm trying to remember what the list was. And man, then you just get into the last 10 years, dude, and you've got Slumdog Millionaire, Million Dollar Baby, Crash, American Beauty, The Hurt Locker, just sort of. Now there's like the Lord of the Rings 3, that won Best Picture a few years ago. But just kind of, you look back at like movies like 10, 15 years ago. I mean, a movie like, like Sleepless in Seattle, or, that wasn't considered like Oscar fare when it came out. I mean, you had Schindler's List, you had other stuff coming out around then. It wasn't considered like that. You wonder if that movie came out now. I mean, it'd be really talked about. It'd have big stars. It'd have, You know, it's a funny movie. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something. But there were a lot. My point is, there was a lot of movies you'd see back there in maybe the 90s. You'd see a ton of movies. A lot of them might be really good. Like, man, that was really funny, or this, or, you know. And they wouldn't be Best Picture caliber stuff. But you still go see it anyway and enjoy it. And I feel like now there's just so many movies out there, so much garbage, just 3D, just, you know, that, and as a result, some of them end up winning, and you're looking at these films like, do I need to go see that? People I know that did see it kind of went, it's boring, it's long. You know, a couple years ago, you did have No Country for Old Men, won Best Picture. I thought that was a really good story. I mean, it was a great book and a good movie and well acted. So that was kind of an exception, really, I think, over the last 10 years. That's my two cents on it, folks. What am I, a movie guy? I'm a music guy. Tell me about music, Phil. Well, well, well. We have been busy here at the studio. Oh, man, it has been so much fun. Been back there mixing. Brian Joyner and his band's been in here, man, recording. We're working on that. Seth Jones cranking out a cool artistic acoustic record he's kind of doing here. Very fun stuff. And also our old friend Jeff King came in, man, from Oklahoma City. You'll remember Jeff from the great North Carolina band, the Notorious Gringos. I mean, he was in there this weekend. Stu Wiley on drums. Me on bass. Blue, the full band's own bass player. Blue was on the bass playing on that session this weekend. So very, very fun. Jeff King's record coming out. Working on that as well. Man, oh man, we've got so much going on. I got an email the other day about following up on remember a few episodes ago we talked about kids cartoons. I got a lot of feedback on that from you guys. So funny. I was talking about how cartoons today just aren't funny. They're all just teaching our kids how to be nice and speak Spanish and recycle. And it's just a beating watching Handy Manny and stuff. My kids can't, they don't get interested in it, you know? So we just, you know, I was talking about, you know, Tom and Jerry and kind of the fun violence. It's just fun, silly, you know, getting hit over the head with a frying pan, Foghorn Leghorn and Roadrunner Coyote kind of stuff. But a couple of y'all pointed out that I was leaving out SpongeBob SquarePants. Very fair critique. Love SpongeBob. It's really almost watching like The Simpsons. That's like saying, hey, what about The Simpsons, Phil? I mean, it's almost a college age adult type cartoon, but very fun. My kids do love, my older kids like SpongeBob. So we watch SpongeBob a lot. Appreciate that. Yeah, man. But most of y'all agreed that the Special Agent Oso and stuff like that was just a beatdown. Oh. You know, it really all started for me, and I guess just because my first kid was born around the Teletubbies era, and that was the first indication of what I was in for, getting up at 5 in the morning and watching the Teletubbies. And just that was kind of what was on. It was just all the rage and just muttering British alien things. And, you know, it wasn't funny. It wasn't there wasn't a story. It was just I just felt like I was on some kind of a bad, like I've been drinking mescaline or something watching this. I don't even know what that's like, but I'd imagine the Teletubbies would be there were it something that occurred frequently. Oh my, and it hasn't gotten a whole lot better. They're just all this, there's all this emphasis, of course, on education, educating the children, you know. And we made the point, of course, that Sesame Street is educational, but it's still funny, you know, Elmo, and, you know, he's appealing. Cookie Monster, Oscar the Grouch, they're funny. They still get me laughing. So, no problem with Sesame Street. But, man, this Disney stuff on the Disney Channel and some of the other channels is just, it's just a beat down. It's a beat down. But thanks for your emails on that. All you guys out there, I read them. I got a good laugh at all those, pointing out the problems with modern cartoons. Well, I can hear a rustling, a rumbling. That can only mean one thing out here in the galley at Trinidad World Recording Studios, that my old road manager, Jordan Powell, is here. Troy Johnson, my old booking agent, both now working in the Miranda Lambert camp. They wanted to swing by and follow up on last week's discussion. They were talking about the Grammys, what it's like working with Miranda Lambert, the Grammy-nominated, award-winning artist, platinum selling out there. Oh, my. They're just out there rolling with the bigwigs. Jordan recently did that recording session with Don Henley. Miranda was singing on Don Henley's new album. Sitting at the mixing console with none other than Stan Lynch, longtime and original drummer of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Just sitting there talking about Petty in the 70s. Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. So we're going to hear more stories from the those guys. They're going to be sticking their head in here, offering some perspective and a look back kind of at our common history. In our second segment here, Troy Johnson and Jordan Powell coming up next.
But I may not get to where these songs I do.
Hey fans, Phil Pritchett here. Man, I've been making albums, recording stuff for a long time. How many of my albums are on p2tunes.com, iTunes? Good grief, 12, 13, 14. I've recorded a lot of them myself. Studios in Nashville, Austin, all over the United States. And man, I have really enjoyed recently making albums for a lot of you out there. A lot of you musicians out there looking for something a little different, a way to get a great sounding record out there, you know, without spending a fortune driving around. You know, some guy at the end of the 4 or 5 days you've got booked aside saying, hey man, you got to come back and mix this thing. You know, that costs X. What I try to do is I put together a whole package start to finish. You'll never spend a penny more than what we come to terms on. Up here at Trinidad World Recording Studios in Fort Worth, Texas, we have a Pro Tools HD rig back there, all kinds of preamps, microphones, guitars, amps. I tell bands all the time, they're always like, what do I have to bring, Phil? I'm like, man, you don't have to bring anything. Like, man, do you got a bass or a guitar? I'm like, dude, we've got 100 of each one. People just walk in and are astounded at the room that my good friend Larry Dillon, who owns the building here, has put together back there. We record all kinds of music, all kinds of budgets, all kind of packages for anything you need to do. If you need to make an album in one day, we'll say, hey, man, here's what it'll take. If he's like, hey, I want to rent the place out for a month, we do that too, and all things in between. So please come see us up here, Fort Worth, Texas, Trinidad World Recording Studios. Hey, it's free to email me, phil@philpritchett.com, or call 817-733-5256. And it's free because I'm going to give you free advice to say, hey, here's maybe a couple pitfalls in recording you might want to think about before going somewhere else. If you come here, we'll have you in and out and recording and having a great time the whole time. Phil Pritchett, that's me, and Trinidad World Recording Studios here in Fort Worth. Give us a call, 817-733-5256. We want to make your next record much tougher.
Ever break through. But I will get to you. Those mountains told us not to compromise. We took an oath together in the sky.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it, from my beautiful studio here in Fort Worth, Texas, Trinidad World Recording Studios, enlightening your musical life as we do every week on this program. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Thrilled you're with us today, and we are thrilled to have back in the studio here two of my old managers, road managers, and guys who've been around the Texas music and Nashville music scene, man, longer than anybody considering their relatively young age, Jordan Powell and Troy Johnson.
Hello.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Now both with the Miranda Lambert organization, but starting all those years ago in the Pritchett van, just carrying Pritchett's little George, that guitar hanging on the wall carrying it around, tuning it up, selling some Pritchett merch. And look where it all led you.
That's right.
Yeah. Man,
it's where it started.
When do I get a check for all this? Just a little thank you, you know?
Man, Johnson's actually going to send you one for both of us.
I'll get my girl on it.
Maybe I ought to start a business. Just, man, you need some trained guys on the road. Just, hey, I bring them up. I bring them up through the ranks.
Yeah.
I love it, man.
Good talent scout.
Good talent scout. That's right. The truth is I'd take all comers, you know, anybody. It's hard to find people willing to help out. That's why you guys were always hardworking, willing. It's like, man.
Well, it's almost like it's like not hard to find people that want to help. It's just finding people who can help.
Right.
Because so everybody wants to do this gig.
They think
until
they
about
do.
Their second day on the road, they're just like,
dude, yeah.
Man,
can't you pick up that guitar?
You know,
like, dude, come on, yeah.
When all the band
finding
guys
finding a road manager, it's just tough.
Yeah.
All the girls are backstage, they're hanging out. and you're going upstairs to count t-shirts and go settle the show, and you go, okay, y'all have fun, I'll be back in an hour, and then we're leaving.
There's no and sex and drugs for Ian, David.
You know, as Ian Faith so famously said in Spinal Tap,
I find lost luggage. I locate mandolin strings in the middle of Austin. That's the role of the road manager.
That is.
A thankless job, but man, not really thankless by the people you're helping out.
Man, I'm sitting here with my BlackBerry. I turned my BlackBerry off the other night, Valentine's night or something. I just said, man, I'm turning my phone off. And I realized I have not turned that phone off in over 1 month. Just it has just been on consistently.
Yeah, yeah. And just ringing, buzzing.
Day, night.
Summoning you constantly.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. We had several road manager. Well, Troy was kind of – I mean, starting out, Troy was one of my first – probably my real first real booking agent.
Right.
People would want to know. Back in Dallas, booking shows. I'd gotten your name from who's that girl you were booking first? Way, way, way back.
Tracy Lynn. She's the first act I ever booked.
Yeah.
Because I was with.
Wow.
I was. Yeah. I know. It's great.
I still see her black and white pictures like at the surf club. Right. There's a couple places where she's up there. Yeah. Yeah.
Check stop. Yeah.
She's Tracy Lynn. Yeah. So you were her booking agent.
I did a very short stint with Corey Morrow. That was like my first gig in the music business. I was with Corey. Quickly left that situation.
That's another show.
Yeah. And I hate saying his name. He knows it. Pivoto.
Yes. Matt Pivoto, my booking agent.
But he hooked me up book. He goes, hey, man, you can move in. Or I had an apartment. Right. I let him move into my apartment.
Right.
And he goes, you know, I'll give you a – I'll pay you $100 and you can book this Tracy Lynn girl.
Okay.
Because I wanted to stay in the business.
Right, right, right.
And she was my first act. Mm-hmm. Tracy Lynn.
Johnson, single-handedly responsible for putting the full band together.
Yes, indeed. You absolutely.
Oh, what a.
Well, I had gotten his name. I was in Nashville. That was kind of when we started working together. I'd moved to Nashville or right before then.
I was working with you before you moved to Nashville.
Before then, but we were kind of like, eh. And then I was in Nashville doing some solo stuff, you know, trying to do the Nashville deal. And then it got to where we were just going to move back to Texas. I said, form the band.
Yeah.
Let's just go full all in, kick ass. But before then, I talked. I can't remember who I talked to. Some club. And I said, man, who's a young booking guy, kind of a hungry guy who's reliable? And I can't remember who I talked to. But they said, man, this guy Troy Johnson is on the ball. And I was like, oh, really? So that's how I got – we met over at Hofbrau. Remember that?
Yep.
Our first meeting.
Yeah.
Right in Fort Worth.
Dude.
So when I moved back, yeah, we did. We said, man, let's get a band together of some new guys. And we knew – I think Stolly had subbed a gig for me once. I come in there, Stolly.
And I
he lived in Austin.
Yeah, he lived in Austin. So when I was with Corey, Blind Luck was opening almost every show. So that's how I met Stolly.
Right.
And then obviously Lynch through with Corey.
Yeah, so. And then Lynch we didn't know about – but Johnson was like, well, oh, he's in.
This is a great story.
So when I had Stolly on the program, I said, so remember Stolly, man, we went on some dates and we went on the first couple tours. I went out and did a bunch of shows and I said, hey, Stolly, want to be in the band? You said, sure. You know, and it was really great. And Stolly just looks at me and goes, that's not how it happened at all.
Yeah.
I go, what do you mean? He goes, you got a bus. I'm like, oh, yeah. And sure enough, he goes, you got a bus.
Toured out of state.
Played a good show. Had a couple beers. And me and Lynch are looking at each other just going, man, this is a great gig. We're in. And then next thing I know, I'm trapped in the back bedroom with Johnson. And you got Lynch in the front bedroom going, hey, Lynch is back there and he's in. Just like, oh, he's in? He said he's in if you're in. Just like, I'm in if he's in. It's like, and then like,
it was a great
plan. It wasn't until years later they were like, wait a minute. I never said I was in. It was a good cop, bad cop deal.
Yeah. Mutt and Jeff.
That's right. And the first thing, the next thing we knew, Phil Pritchard and the full band. I don't know if we named it the full band until about later, maybe.
Yeah.
There was always kind of a Phil Pritchard, man, we need something for the band, like Phil Pritchard and the Astronauts or something. I don't know. And I would say, and you know, of course, we'd always say, like, hey, Phil's playing tonight. I said, oh, is it solo or is he with the full band? Is the band with him? I was like, oh, this is a full band show. And, you know, we had Phil and full.
It'd be the three-piece, kind of
humorous.
It's been
a good line. A lot of people get sick of their band name, like really regret. Remember Fred Andrews just saying naming his band Honey Brown was the worst thing he ever did in his life.
Which was correct.
I remember him saying that. Just one night, I was like, "What are you talking about?" He just goes, "Oh, I'm so sick of it. It doesn't mean what it used to." You know what I mean? But just, you know, we had like a the full band though. I've never
I've never tired of that moniker. It's pretty simple.
I don't know.
Simple enough.
A good handle.
So then shortly after that, with Troy's booking the band, and we bring on a young, strapping college student from Texas A&M by the name of Jordan Powell. Mm-hmm. Here he comes out of the ranks. What was your resume to that point?
Man, I had
You were still in college.
Yeah, again. had started with Kreger, did a year on the road with Kreger.
Right.
Did
in his formative years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He used to say that he paid me weekly. Very weekly.
With an A in the middle?
Yeah, exactly. So did a year on the road with Kreger, you know, stringing mm-hmm. guitars, booking hotel rooms, yeah. selling merch, and then met Jeremy Elliott, Jack Ingram's tour manager.
Long-time tour manager.
Yeah, Jeremy hired me. I went out, did the same thing with Jack, sold merch, strung guitars, just kind of learned everything. And
All the while kind of going to school and just – I mean, on the weekends, you would just drive out and meet them somewhere,
yeah, man,
like you did for us?
Especially at the end of college, I figured out, man, the key is you know, registering for your classes the moment they open up.
Yeah.
And you schedule them all. Man, I would literally wake up. I'd go to class Monday through Wednesday. Go to class Monday morning at
all
8 a.m.,
yeah.
be there till 5 o'clock, get all my classes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning.
Yeah.
And I'd get in the car and come meet the van or whatever it was Thursday afternoon.
It's hard for me to remember how that worked. I mean, that's so much organization. But I mean, we never missed anything. How did we do it? Someone was asking, if we were coming south, we'd pick you up in College
right.
Station on the
Park
way to
Park at the Walmart in Waco.
Yeah, that's right.
That was it. You know?
Just jump in the car.
Yep.
Oh,
and then, you know, in the later years after Lynch had gotten, you know, a real job that was still playing in the van, it was
right.
like, man, Lynch, we have this show Thursday night. Man, my boss is not going to let me off again.
Yeah.
And we just come up with Lynch. Just, man, duck out about 4 o'clock on Thursday. I got a Southwest flight for you.
Yeah.
It gets into Corpus at 7. We're on stage at 8.
Yeah, getting bass player Ryan Lynch to the gigs became a big hustle.
So, you know, he'd play the gig Thursday, and then Friday morning he'd wake up and call. And, you know, the first time I was like, man, I can't come in Friday. I think I have the flu. But after a couple of those, you got to come up with something better. So, man, I'd read, like, the New England Journal of Medicine and just be like, man, tell them you have a defective mitral valve in your heart, and you got to go in for a CT scan. So, man, you know, he'd tell him that, and literally after a couple of those, his boss came in and was like, look, man, if you need to take a leave of absence or anything you need, we're behind you 100%. We just want to make sure that you're okay.
Yeah, Lynch's boss thought he had some sort of condition.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was kind of like that. It was almost like a Seinfeld episode where just the boss is just, we're pulling for you, Ryan. Just thanks a lot, sir.
Thanks.
But he was, yes, yeah. that was kind of dedication Lynch had, you know, to the full band.
That's right.
He was willing to.
Yeah.
Just.
And then around that time, we finally got where we got Shane Hildreth down south,
mm-hmm.
Bass player,
yeah.
subbing some gigs, you know, where Lynch just couldn't make it. The bass player started to become a shuffle.
Yeah.
Started to become a shuffle after a while. So, man, so Jonathan, you were off with, what was your next? Eli
I went
Young?
From, yeah, or Eli. Jack? Well, I went to Kreger.
Okay. Right.
When Kirby passed away,
right?
I took that gig over.
That's right.
And then from there, I was with Roger for like 2 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And then I was booking Eli Young before I took the Roger gig,
uh-huh.
and so I kind of knew those
in
guys.
Their formative years again.
Exactly. Yeah.
Opening for my band.
Yeah.
As everybody has, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I tell bands that they're on the right track. They're opening for me. I'm like, man, you're in a good spot.
If you're open for Pritchett, or
I go, man. They go, man, really? Right. They go, why is that? I'm just like, if you're open for me, man, you know, you should
go on to greatness.
Things
Ragweed
things
and
will
Randy Rogers and Kreger and whoever else, man. Yeah, Eli Young. So mm-hmm. Eli Young, that must have been a fun ride there for a little while.
No comment.
Huh? No comment on
no,
that.
No, it was great, man. It was awesome. Those guys. Well, it was just they were
young and aggressive, traveling a lot.
Yeah, those guys worked their butts off, man.
Yeah,
they really did. It was for being young.
Yeah,
you know, and I was going into it because I mean, I was married, you know, and I'd kind of worked with Kreger and booking, so I wasn't sure. I'd, you know, those guys like to party a little mm-hmm. bit, and so going into it, I realized they were smart guys.
Right.
I mean, business wise.
Right.
So I think
they
that's,
were hooked into Frank Liddell and
yeah,
they kind had, of the they Nashville. Had the, did he the produce their first record, or was he just kind
yeah.
of?
Yeah. No,
of
no, a, no. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He produced yeah. one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, but yeah, so great guys did that for about 2 years, almost two.
Yeah.
And then decided to leave and went to Nashville, I think. So I went to Chris Young. Yeah, because I went straight from Eli Young to Chris Young.
Now, remind me who Chris Young is.
Little guy, got three number ones.
RCA reporting artist. You know, just
how out of the loop is Pritchard on the Nashville?
That's all right, man. That's all right.
Chris Young, three number ones. Yeah. No, but he was on one of those shows, right?
He was on Nashville Star, yeah. Star,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And then Jordan hooked me up with that gig. He's just like, I told him I was leaving. I called him. I think I called him one day. I was like, man, I'm out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm out on the EYB gig.
Yeah.
And he goes, I got to move. And Jordan just goes, fly to Nashville. I'll hook it up.
Yeah.
So I just fly to Nashville, and he's got me a couple interviews.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
dude, Jordan Powell, if you need someone's number, it's in that BlackBerry. That BlackBerry over there is worth $1 million.
Yeah.
You know.
Pretty good.
I mean, I could sell you out in a minute.
Every time he walks out of production, I go through it.
Suddenly, Chris Christopherson and Don Henley be getting Stan Lynch be getting phone calls.
Yeah. From, hey, yeah. Jordan Powell gave me your number. Who?
Who? Yeah.
That would happen. That would happen. Powell is the kind of guy just on the way to the gig. He's just constantly calling and texting. Just inviting out. It's, you know, just all that important business stuff that's so hard to keep up with. But just we'd be playing at the Firehouse in Houston, and Powell would be going, I just sent an email to some guy, just inviting him out. And they might not come, but sometimes they would, you know. And then the next year would roll around, and you're playing the Conroe Catfish Fry. You're like, oh, yeah, we kind of invited him out for the to hang out backstage. You know, just stuff
networking,
like that.
Networking.
That's really your true calling.
Jordan is great.
Face-to-face networking.
Network guy.
Yeah.
Are you a big are you just with the phone, or are you kind of a Twitter and Facebook guy, or not?
Do
really?
Not social network at all. Have never done so.
Now there's a topic.
No
for
MySpace,
conversation.
No Facebook.
We're gonna start
no
a
Twitter.
Fan page for Powell though.
Yeah, a Jordan Powell fan page. America's favorite road manager.
Yeah.
What other show's gonna interview a road manager than this show?
Man, I just
cutting
I don't
edge know. Stuff.
Yeah.
So, man, let's get back to your – we're talking a little bit about your experience meeting Stan Lynch of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers in recent Jordan Powell news. So I was really interested in how all that went down. But you're talking about you'd met Don Henley, of course, the lead singer for the Eagles, famous
well, man,
Dallas
saw
guy.
Him the day I got hired with Miranda.
Right.
Saw him at Rafa's and just thought, man, this
sounds like a Charles Dickens story. There were three Henley appearances before I actually get to see him, you know.
Right. So then
you'll be visited by Don Henley
probably,
three times.
Man, probably 4 months later, 5 months after that. I'm in Dallas, still living in Dallas, and I'm over at the mobile station on the corner of Preston and Northwest Highway.
Right.
Just filling my
That's
car
my
up.
My old stomping grounds.
It is, yeah. Man. Filling my car up with gas, and I'm on the phone with one Troy Johnson.
Right.
I'm just sitting there talking, filling my car up with gas.
And a Lamborghini pulls up.
No. And so I say, okay, man, I'll talk to you later. And I pull the gas pump out, hang it back up, and I'm getting in my car, and I look over on the other side of the fuel island. And there's Don Henley.
I thought he'd have like an electric car that ran on like beans or something.
Big Suburban, and he's washing his windshield. I called Johnson right back. I go, dude, you're not going to believe this. Don Henley is next to me at the gas station. Johnson goes, well, go talk to him. I go, man, I can't go talk to him. He goes, dude, you're in the business.
Come on,
you're working with Miranda already. I mean, man, go talk to him. And you know, at that time, Miranda was managed by Simon Renshaw, who had managed the Dixie Chicks and Mary J. Blige, and you know, and was partners with Irving Azoff, who manages the Eagles.
Right.
So I knew
you had a connection there.
Yeah, man. You know,
6 degrees of separation.
I thought, man, Don's gonna know Simon Renshaw. Troy goes, man, you have to get out of that car and just go say hello to him.
Yeah.
So I went, okay, man, okay. So I get out of the car.
Put on your Glenn Frey t-shirt.
I walk up to him. He's just cleaning his windshield. And I said, hey, Don. I said, hey, just wanted to introduce myself. I live, you know, down the street a little bit. I said, my name's Jordan Powell. I said, I work with Simon Renshaw and Marion Craft. And you know, I tour manage this girl, Miranda Lambert. And he goes, okay. And turns around, starts washing his windshield again. That's it. I was just standing there.
No handshake?
No, I mean, he just nodded and said, okay, and washed his windshield.
Oh.
And I just got back in the car, and I called Johnson. I go, man, that could not have gone worse.
Oh, if you're the Eagles, if you're in the Eagles, man, you don't have to put up with any BS, I guess.
No.
You know, you just don't want to be bothered. So that was the second appearance of Don Henley. Mm-hmm. So the third was the studio?
No, third was
okay,
actually...
there was another The Ghost of Christmas Future shows up at some point
about
on a dark desert highway.
Three
Where was
years
this
ago, or 2 years ago, we did the CMA Awards.
Okay.
And the Eagles had put out a new record, and they were kind of, I guess, you know, trying to send it to country radio or something.
Yeah.
So they're going to play on the CMA Awards. And man, that was actually, you know, Joe Walsh and Timothy B. Schmidt and Henley, they're all hanging in the hallway like we were talking about.
Right.
You know, some people choose to, on those award shows, stay in their dressing room and then security takes them to the stage and they don't talk to anybody. Man, they were out. They were in the hallway.
Just
they
the
were
Eagles.
Hanging out. Yeah,
yeah,
man.
Dude.
It was really cool. And by that time, you know, Miranda had kind of climbed the ladder and was
a little more
well known
in the scene, right?
And we walked by and Don stopped her and said, "Hey, look, I've heard your stuff. I'm a big fan. I'm from, you know, Linden, Texas," and she's from Lindale, which is very close to one another.
"My name's Don Henley. I play this band called the Eagles."
Right, right. So, you know, it was a little warmer, but still, you know, I'm just standing in the background, just, you know, going, man, I ain't even going to stick my hand out after last time.
Yeah, right,
you know?
Right.
But
Don, my name's Jordan. I watched you wash your windshield a while back.
Right.
You didn't throw that at him?
No, I didn't throw it at him. I thought about it, but I thought about, you know, like kind of big timing him, just if he did stick his hand out and say, "Hey, I'm Don." Yeah, we've met.
Yeah,
you know,
we've met.
We've met before.
That'd have been the way to go on that.
Yeah.
Twice.
So then finally, so that was the third Henley encounter.
Right.
The fourth one of which is the studio.
Fourth one was the
Henley
studio.
Henley in there just going crazy.
Man, you know, I mean, he's one of the greatest singers in rock and roll history.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, most recognizable voice, for sure. Yeah. No question about it. So he's got his way of doing any things in the studio.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, it is what it is, and he you know. Knew what he wanted, and we were
Stan Lynch of the Heartbreakers was there to help him.
Just sitting back there, man, just, you know, occasionally Don would turn around and go, "Stan, what do you think?" "Man, I think that was a good take. Yeah, we got some stuff there." "Yeah. Okay, let's move on."
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
"Keep it moving," he always says. Yeah. Henley, man. God, the Eagles. Who's left for you? McCartney? I mean, who else?
Well, you know what? We did the Kennedy Center Honors.
Yeah, McCartney was there.
McCartney was there. Did not meet him.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are out front.
Right.
All the talent is backstage,
right.
So they don't, you know, we didn't get a chance to
who
meet
remains
McCartney.
Out there? Who's someone you think, man, I would just love to meet?
Springsteen.
You know, haven't met him?
Hadn't met him. Hadn't met Petty. Springsteen, we almost, I've got a mutual friend with him.
Yeah.
John Eddy. And, so we were playing New York opening night of this last tour. We were playing Terminal 5. And man, just on a whim, John was going to be at the show. And I said, "Hey, man, why don't you call Bruce, see if Bruce wants to come out?"
Right.
So, you know, John called. John is best friends with his guitar tech and you know, longtime 30-year employee. And so John called up and said, "Hey, man, is Bruce around?" "Yeah, man, he's off tonight, whatever." And so John said, "Look, pass the word. We'll take care of him. We'll find out." And the guy called back and said, "Hey, man, you know, I told Bruce about it. He didn't have anything going on. He may give you a shout if he wants to come out."
Right.
So I didn't tell anybody. I didn't want to get hopes up. But, I mean, I'm just sitting
checking
there.
Checking that phone.
You know, just sitting there. I'm walking, you know, walking the back entrances going,
got
okay,
a call
man.
From a Bruce Springsteen.
Right. Man, if
I'll
he pulls it. Up, we'll meet him at this door. I'll put him over here, you know. So,
oh man, that'd be great. Yeah. Well, dude, after you meet Springsteen and McCartney, we'll have you back on the show. You too, Johnson.
Yeah, did you
You're
hear
always
the
welcome.
Did you hear the story about when Springsteen showed up to Randy Rogers and
Reckless
Kelly soundcheck?
No, what was this?
They were
playing the Stone.
Was this recently?
Tony, about 4 months ago,
oh, okay.
5 months ago.
Yeah.
They were out on a tour with Robert
Wow.
Earl. It was Reckless, Randy, and Robert Earl.
Yeah.
One of the nights out on tour, Robert Earl had like a private party in the Northeast.
Yeah.
So Randy and Reckless pick up a gig at the Stone Pony. They're just going to go you know, play for the door or something. So they're in the middle of sound check, and they look up, and in through the side door walks Bruce Springsteen.
You're kidding.
Watches all of sound check, hangs out at the bar, whatever, you know, for an hour.
Good
and then
grief.
At the end, you know, both bands just pile in. They take one big picture. It's just, I mean, you know, Cody and Willie Braun and Randy, everybody just big smile, and just Springsteen's just standing there, you know.
That text message picture went out like that.
Yeah,
it just started spreading, you know.
Bruce Springsteen. Sound check. God, that's cool, man. That's cool. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Well, some good news there, man, for Texas guys stretching out on the East Coast, hanging with the boss. Well, maybe, pal, when you get in good with the boss, you'll bring in Henley. You'll bring in Springsteen to be on the podcast.
We'll do it.
Huh?
That'd be a great podcast.
Heck yeah, man. Heck yeah. Not as good as this one, though.
Right.
With Troy Johnson and Jordan Powell, my old managers, booking agents, road guys out there playing with Miranda Lambert. on the stages of the world, meeting everybody. So fun to have them in here talking about their experiences. Thanks for coming in, gentlemen.
Always good to be back.
Thank you very much, Phil.
Well, stick around, fans. We got a treat for you in the vault. Blindfolding myself, walking over, putting my hands on a record. We're going to throw it on the turntable, see what we've got next. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here with you on the Pizzu Podcast, as we are every week. Thank you, all of you enlightened souls, for tuning in this week. How about old Troy Johnson and Jordan Powell dropping by the studio, sharing their stories of yore with Phil Pritchett and the full band, and some new stories as well. Hanging with the Grammys, rubbing elbows with all the bigwigs in the industry like Eminem and Don Henley, Bob Dylan, and first and foremost, myself, P2, how you doing? Boy, I'd like to see the look on Stan Lynch's face from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers when Jordan Powell says, "Hey, man, guess whose show we were on last week? Phil Pritchett's P2 Podcast." No doubt Stan Lynch would just be astounded. Just astounded! And ask Powell, "Hey, how do I get on that show, man? I want to go on the podcast. Give my testimony to the world through Phil Pritchett's podcast," which he is more than welcome to do. Come on in, Stan, anytime you're ready. Well, 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 who do you got for us in the vault, Phil? Oh, I'm a huge Beck fan. Loved it. You know, Loser by Beck. I'm a loser, baby, so why don't you kill me? The first time I heard that on the radio, I just pulled the car over into the ditch and just got out of the car. Just walked around in a circle with my hands on my head, just going, good grief. Finally, somebody's done it. Someone has blown up music as I thought of it to this point in my life. You know, you're listening to KGSR, the hip little Austin station there in Austin I listen to all the time. Oh, you know, it's just one McMurtry song after another, followed by Emmylou Harris, followed by Steve Earle, followed by the... All well and good. All great. Okay, cool. Love it, love it, love it. That's why we listen to it, right? Then all of a sudden, in the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey. And I just said, man, this is some dude that I'm going to have to pay attention to. Well, of course, that was our good friend Beck Hansen from his album Odelay. Or was that on? That wasn't on Odelay. That was from the Loser. Mellow Gold, it was called. His first album. He made a lot of weird demos and stuff. I got all kinds of Beck EPs and stuff in my iTunes. It's confusing. So this was a record sea change that he made with the great producer Nigel Goodrich. He did. Didn't Goodrich do Radiohead? Did he do OK Computer? I don't know if it was that one he did, but... Goodrich, a great producer, known for his big, warm sounds, his atmospherics, all that kind of cool stuff that we love in producing. But Beck goes in, this was, you know, one of his later albums, I guess about 10 years after he'd been going. And he previously made an album called Mutations, which is another one of my favorite albums, that was very, you know, very acoustic, kind of lo-fi in a sense. Not so much of his dancing freaky disco thing that he's kind of known for, really, in the popular world. But this record was a real eye-opening. Sea Change by Beck. Man, this was just a full band staple coming home off the road Sunday mornings. Driving home. What are you going to listen to in the van? You got your coffee. You're exhausted from being gone, you know, for a week or something like that. Driving home. You got the coffee. You can't just put in Cake. You can't put in the Allman Brothers. You just think, dude. And all of a sudden, you know, Sea Change, Beck. Just something mellow. Some nice warm sounds, a good reverby vocal comes on, and that's what this one is, man. Love this album. This is Already Dead off of that album, Sea Change by Beck. Mm-hmm.
pleasures of the day are the treasures you could hold. Days turn to sand, losing strength in every hand. They can't hold you anymore. Already dead to me now. Already dead to me now. 'Cause it feels like I'm watching something.
Indeed, indeed. Rolling back from some gig in Chicago with the full band. Listening to Beck as the cold gray light of dawn comes over the horizon. That is already dead from his great record, Sea Change. I don't know when it was. A few years back. 5, 6 years, something like that. But a staple in the van of the full band. Oh, love us some Beck. You're not going to put on that funky disco 70s Beck kind of stuff when you're trying to drive back from a gig. This was our record out there. This was the one that got us home safely, or at least got us out of the gate early in the morning. Love this next song. It's been in a few movies. God, I can't remember which one. I remember hearing it and just thinking, man, it's a great song in this context. Lost Cause, Beck, Sea Change.
Sorry eyes, they cut through bone, make it hard to leave you alone, leave you here wearing your wounds, waving your guns. Somebody knew. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Cause there's too many people they used to know. They see you coming, they see you go. Know your secrets, you know theirs. town is crazy. Nobody cares. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Tired of fighting, I'm tired of fighting, fighting for a lost cause. There's a place we are going, you ain't never been before. At your back now, no one's standing at your door. That what you thought love was for. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost cause I'm tired of fighting. I'm tired of fighting. Fighting for a lost cause.
Backwards reverb there at the end. Thank you. Beck Hansen, man. There he is. Sea Change. Lost Cause. Oh, this just reminds me of driving home from those gigs. Love it, man. Our special thanks this week to Jordan Powell and Troy Johnson, my old booking agent and road manager, respectively, for dropping by, sharing some tales of today from the Grammys and elsewhere with Miranda Lambert. Thanks for dropping by, guys. They're always welcome any time on the podcast here. Great hearing those stories. I just hope Miranda's vocals make it on that Don Henley record. Can't wait to check that out. Hope we can hear Jordan Powell spitting into his dip cup in the background or something like that. Something to give it just a little in-the-now feel as you're listening back to that track. I hope that's on there. Well, for crying out loud, go to p2tunes.com. Download all my albums. $4 a piece, including the Alive Alone record. I don't know, it's 24 songs. Complete live acoustic show I did in Houston a year ago. Very popular with people on the podcast. It's not in physical CD form. It is not available at iTunes. So if you haven't picked up a Live Alone yet, check that out. P2Tunes.com, $4. It's 25 songs. Just pull it right in your iTunes as it downloads, and I appreciate it so much. Or all the other albums you can get on iTunes as well. Also, bands, call me 817-733-5256 to come record at Trinidad. We've been doing a lot of records lately, got a lot of different ways of doing it, all kinds of budgets, all kinds of music, all kinds of, whether you're a pro or just someone doing it for fun with your friends from high school, you know, just getting together, recording a few songs. Any and all things, we love doing it, I love it. We always have a great time recording here, no matter what it is. We just keep it recording, keep the tape rolling, and keep it fun. Trinidad World Recording Studios. Well, I'm going to leave you with one of my favorites here off of Sea Change, the great Beck record. This one is called Little Ones. Just anthemic, long, rocking at the end. Sing along with us. We'll see you next week on the podcast, everyone. Much tougher.
Go to sleep. We're so tired now, all together in a snake pit of souls. New days, throw your chains away, try to hang your hopes on the wing. together by black ropes we pull from a sway. Every way in a stolen boat, they're floating.